In August 2016, DIA welcomed Dr. Sudeep Parikh as Senior Vice President and Managing Director for the DIA Americas region. Dr. Parikh previously served as Vice President and General Manager of Health and Consumer Solutions at Battelle, where he led Battelle's healthcare improvement, public health research, and consumer, industrial, and medical technology development teams. He also served as senior liaison for the U.S. Senate Appropriations Committee in budget negotiations with the pharmaceutical and biotechnology industries and research universities, centers, and hospitals. I am Alberto Grignolo, Deputy Editor of DIA Global Forum. I am grateful to be joined today by Dr. Parikh to discuss his vision for one of the most vital regions of DIA in the entire healthcare industry, the Americas. Welcome, Sudeep, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for doing this, Alberto. I appreciate it.
My first question, a simple one. What most attracted you to DIA?
That's a great question, especially when you're talking to someone new in an organization, because it spells out what they see as the place where they're going. And so let me spell it out in three pieces. The pieces that attracted me are the mission as it's stated now, the history, which is a long and I think quite achievement-filled one, and then the opportunity for what's coming in the future. So if I speak to the mission today, the mission that I see both on the website and then as I see it manifesting itself in the meetings, conferences, trainings, and publications of DIA is to serve as a neutral global forum for the key conversations that need to happen to move the healthcare products ecosystem forward. And, you know, that sounds high and mighty, but what it really is getting the right products to people to improve their lives, providing the forum to make that happen, because frankly, it's hard. We are in a challenging ecosystem where the low-hanging fruit of creating drugs for billions of people, safe and effective in billions of people, we've covered that ground over the last 150 years. And so the next phase is very exciting. There's so many new opportunities, new technologies, and frankly, new regulatory frameworks to work in, but it requires a place to have those discussions and to move the field forward. And I see that as DIA's mission, and it's very exciting. What proves that DIA can actually accomplish that mission is its history. You know, there aren't many 52-year-old organizations working in this space, 52-year-old nonprofit organizations that are really individual membership organizations. You know, DIA began during the crisis of thalidomide in the 1960s and really served as a counterbalance, as a place for folks in the ecosystem, the regulators and the folks in the industry, to talk about how do you come up with a safe product. And that history, fast forward today, the issues have changed and the technologies have changed, but frankly, the overall goal has not, and that's exciting. So then the third piece of it, the third leg, mission, history, and now opportunity. The opportunity that I see is that the world, this industry has gone global. The regulatory framework is going more global. There's certainly more collaboration amongst the regulators, but frankly, it's by no means complete. And then the integration of the payers and the patients into that ecosystem, that's just starting, and it's really it's going to play a critical role in what happens next. And so I see big challenges, and frankly, when there are big challenges, I like organizations that rise to that occasion. And DIA, as an individual membership organization, not representing the interests of the industry or of the regulator or of the patient specifically, but rather the individuals who make up those organizations, is just the perfect place to have an impact. And that's what I'm excited about.
As you join DIA, what can you draw from your previous experience with Battelle into your service for DIA?
That's a great question. Yeah, Battelle, the Battelle Memorial Institute is another, long-standing organization founded in the 1920s, also a nonprofit, but has become a $5 billion research and development organization. And the piece that I ran, the Health and Consumer Solutions Business Unit, was about a $150 million R&D organization doing work for the pharmaceutical industry, biotech industry, and for government. And so I know the players from each of those spaces. Frankly, I am a person who's helped develop drugs and who has done preclinical trials, done large epidemiological studies, collected real-world evidence, and run a 150-person data scientist group looking at big data. These are all issues that are front and center for DIA and for our members. And so that technical piece is there. The other is just the overall mission of improving human lives. Battelle shares that mission, as does DIA, and knowing how to treat that mission operationally as a business, so knowing how to be efficient, knowing how to accomplish something in the matter-of-fact way that a business needs to, being robust about it, However, doing it with a mission and a vision in mind that is, frankly, the mission and vision of a .org, of doing good, moving a field forward, that's also shared by Vital. So it's great preparation for being at DIA, because now I feel not just looking at it from the perspective of one organization of Vital, but rather from the perspective of 13,000 members. It really was exciting.
Turning to your previous work in the government, from your perspective as a former senior liaison for the U.S. Senate Appropriations Committee, what is your view of PDUFA, Prescription Drug User Fee Act, and in particular the forthcoming reauthorization negotiation?
So my time in the Senate, I spent 10 years in the U.S. Senate working for the Appropriations Committee. You know, it's a great place to get a 150,000-foot view of what's happening in this space, to all the way from federal development dollars that go into the National Institutes of Health or into BARDA or into the Department of Defense, all the way to authorization bills like PDUFA, where we're looking at ways to speed up drug approvals within the regulatory agency. So my view of PDUFA is, first of all, at the big picture level, it's actually government working. So if you imagine, before PDUFA, there was a problem to solve, which was how to get FDA the resources needed to have timely answers on drug approval applications. And PDUFA is actually the Congress working and getting something right, which is to create basically a business model that enabled a solution to the problem. So that's my 150,000 foot level of view of PDUFA. If I bring myself down to the upcoming negotiations, number one is it has to happen. So we cannot let it lapse. It's an absolute must. And second, we have to make sure that, in addition to user fees, that we authorize FDA to have the resources it needs to react in timely ways outside of the PDUFA process. It's an agency that is overseeing 25% of the U.S. economy in terms of regulation, and has a budget of the $2.5 billion range. It's a very small budget, and it's when you talk to the leaders of FDA, they will tell you they don't have the scientific staff that they feel like they need, that they are resource limited, and that when we accelerate the approval process for a drug, all it does is take the folder for that drug and put it on the top of the desk, but then other folders move down. And so that is not the intent of accelerated review or breakthrough review. And I want to make sure that in the upcoming reauthorization for PDUFA, it's an opportunity, because it is a must-pass bill, of getting legislation that helps FDA succeed in its mission, which is a vital part of this ecosystem, right? So we have our roles to play, the regulatory role, the industry role. Industry supports FDA having the resources it needs to do its work in a timely manner. And I think FDA wants to see drugs approved quickly that are safe and effective. So it's really an opportunity for making progress. And we're going to be monitoring that just to make sure that we understand what's in the upcoming bill and can share that with our members.
In your 10 years in the Senate, on the Senate staff, were you personally involved in prior PDUFA renegotiations?
I was, yeah. So I worked for the Appropriations Committee. I worked for a member of the Appropriations Committee. The chairman at the time was Ted Stevens and became Thad Cochran of Mississippi. But the key member was Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. He was very interested in PDUFA, had made sure that we were involved in the conference negotiations that occurred between the Senate and the House. I continued to be a champion of PDUFA until the time he left the Senate in 2010.
What personal lessons did you learn from the process of being involved in PDUFA renegotiations? Anything you can share with us?
At the biggest level, it's never let the perfect get in the way of the good. Sometimes there are many, many stakeholders at the table in a negotiation like that, and the perfect is the enemy of the good. There is so much that can be accomplished by getting passage of something like this, where you have the big picture, you are accomplishing big goals, and there may be small items that you disagree with, but finding a way to mitigate those or finding compromise there is a really valuable piece of wisdom that I learned from being a part of that process.
And thank you for sharing that. Let me get to the next question, which is, in the current healthcare business environment now undergoing such profound and extensive change, including patients' access to the therapies they need, what is your primary short-term focus for DIA in the Americas?
So short-term, there are activities and streams of work support that are ongoing already, which I'm very supportive of and which I want to make sure that continue and are done well. So, for example, we have a meeting on biosimilars, I think it's next month, and we have a meeting on study endpoints in December. You know, we have a meeting on combination products in October, and then we have the Canada annual meeting coming up in October as well. These are important venues, top of mind issues, and my short-term goal is to make sure that there's context to each of those, because frankly, they are all part of the bigger challenges that are facing this ecosystem, which is we have to figure out what is the right way to create the regulatory path for biosimilars. Who's going to want to participate in the clinical trial related to biosimilars? It's a challenging prospect. And then, you know, you get to tying all that up into how do patients get access to the new cancer immunotherapies or cures for hepatitis C? You know, as I've spent time talking to our members and talking to folks here in the Washington community, you know, one of the refrains I hear often is that value and access are the new value of death. You know, when I first came to Washington 20 years ago, we often talked about the valley of death, the fact that there weren't, you get to a certain point of development in either in a drug or a device pathway, and then you didn't have the funding to cross the transom and get to a product. Frankly, a lot of research has been done. If you look at the technologies that are out there between CRISPR and cancer immunotherapies and other things that are going to be joining the battle in terms of technology, one of the things that, I think worries a lot of folks, both in the industry and in the government, and in the patient community is value and access. So we will try to provide context for each of those things, the biosimilars, the study endpoints, combination products, and everything we do, provide the context of what are the big picture questions that are really buffeting our ecosystem, because frankly, it's the best of times and it's the worst of times. And that's an opportunity, because things like CRISPR, things like immunotherapies, things like new devices in diabetes, they don't come along every day. But we're making fantastic progress. We want to make sure that the regulatory regimes and the reimbursement regimes keep pace with that technology.
Understood. But long term, if we can expand the horizon, if you will, what are your plans for DIA Americas over the next, say, 3 to 5 years?
So I want to make sure that we are providing that where the rubber meets the road aspect of what DIA does. So like I said, our individual members are every day on the front lines of working the regulatory process for products, either from the regulatory side or from the industry side. They're in the patient part of the community that is advocating for better regulatory frameworks or more funding for basic research. We want to see all of that pulled together, but then for DIA's role in it, we want to see an elevation of that. Make sure we have the bandwidth to provide a two-way communication between where the rubber meets the road and the 150,000 foot level where action happens. So whether it's patient engagement and understanding what that means at the strategic level, where you see the leadership level of large companies and small companies, really high engagement, frankly, complete pairing of the incentive of the patient and the industry. Then you get down to where the rubber meets the road, and it's very challenging to interpret that into how do you actually engage patients. So I want DIA to be serving as that two-way communication between where the rubber meets the road, the individual members of DIA, and the 150,000 foot level where policy gets made. Not in terms of advocating for one policy or another, but providing a neutral forum where our stakeholders can have a thoughtful conversation about the direction and the challenges, and then drive that to from sort of the theory, drive it from the idea to action, drive it from the place where we're talking about it to coming to a consensus, and then coming to a place where we have solutions for these big challenges. They're challenges, but frankly, they're not as hard as the technology. So we've got to be able to work through them. And DIA, in the next 3 to 5 years, I want serving as a focal point for that.
Consistent with DIA's role as a neutral global forum and a convener of a variety of relevant voices and stakeholders?
Absolutely. So again, not taking a point of view, but really providing the framework and the agenda for what are the key issues, and then letting the stakeholders work through them, not ourselves taking a position, being neutral.
And finally, Sudip, what message would you like to share with DIA's member network throughout the Americas?
Just I'm very happy to join you all. DIA is you. DIA is its membership. It exists because of you to serve as a forum for you all to advance this field, to advance your own careers, and to advance the health of humanity. And those are laudable goals, all of them. And I'm looking forward to working with you. And that if you have questions, I want to be as accessible as I can be. Please reach out. I'm more than happy to have a conversation about your input for what we need to be doing at DIA.
Thank you. In closing, thank you very much for speaking with DIA Global Forum and having this illuminating conversation for our listeners. And I wish you the best of luck in your new position, Sudeep.
Thank you so much, Alberto. I very much enjoyed it.